From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made this past April when the Empire State Apprenticeship Program was included in the state budget. It's a job training program, and Assemblyman Harry Bronson says it's a key to helping reduce the unemployment rate among young adults, particularly ages 16 to 24. And the apprenticeship program does more than that. We're going to get into that in just a minute. We're going to welcome Assemblyman Bronson back to the program today, and we'll talk about jobs, closing the skills gap. We'll also talk about state business on many other fronts. Healthcare, for starters, with questions about single payer and other possible versions. Is there momentum for single payer? We'll get his thoughts on that. We'll get your questions for the Assemblyman, including what he thinks New York State can do in the wake of President Trump's decision to pull the United States out of the Paris Climate Agreement, and a lot more. So with that, we'll just welcome Assemblyman Harry Bronson back to the program. How are you?
I'm doing well, Evan. Thank you for having me on.
It's great to have you back here. And you were just kind of telling me the story on the Empire State Apprenticeship Program, which is your bill that is included this year, was not included last year. What happened last year?
Well, last year we introduced the bill, and I and Senator Gallivan carries the bill in the Senate. We tried to make it part of our budget negotiations. It made it through and got passed in both the Assembly One House Budget Resolution as well as the Senate One House Budget Resolution. We made it to literally the last day, 7 o'clock a.m. in the morning. I got a phone call saying that the negotiators were going to have to pull the bill off the table, which we did. But then we did it. We went through that process again this year, and we were successful in getting it passed in the budget. It is a $50 million investment in apprenticeship programs, $10 million over the next 5 years.
What's it like, by the way, when you get a bill that at the very last second, you think it's in and it's out?
It's tough. It's tough. You work so hard, and you reach out to a bunch of members in both the Assembly and the Senate. You work with leadership. You work with the governor's office. You try very hard to get it done. So at the last minute, it gets pulled. But that was the first year we introduced the bill. So to get it that far was encouraging. I was glad we were able to make it this year.
And so now, with the money that we're talking about allocating, let's talk about exactly how it would be used. And I'm going to bring in a guest on the phone in just a second, but why don't you kind of walk me through, because people hear apprenticeship, you hear job training. You know, I'm not sure how people feel about the efficacy or the history of those, knowing that they're going to work. Why do you think this works, Harry?
Well, we currently, under the New York State apprenticeship programs, we have, I think it's 143 different approved apprenticeship programs. In order to qualify for a tax credit here, an employer or an association of employers would have to have an approved apprenticeship program through the Department of Labor. That requires an academic component to it, a job training component to it, and it requires ongoing testing to make sure that people are graduating from one apprentice year to the next. So this is a well-tested program. It's been very successful here in New York State. We've made some adjustments. Some of those adjustments include an additional tax credit if you offer mentoring. That's to help harder to place people, whether you're talking people coming out of poverty, young people who don't have a job history, things of that nature. And we also have increased the benefit if someone graduates from the first year to the second apprenticeship year and onward up to graduation, which is typically a five-year program.
Let me get a phone guest to join us, and this is Kevin Stump, the Northeast Regional Director of Young Invincibles, who's on the line with us now. Kevin, how are you?
Good. How's everyone doing? Thanks for having us.
Good. Why don't you tell us what Young Invincibles is, first of all?
Yeah, Young Invincibles is a national nonpartisan research and policy group that really works to elevate the voices of and expand economic opportunities for today's young adult generation. So in New York State, high youth unemployment is a key issue of ours.
Yeah, and I'll ask you, Kevin, and I'll ask the Assemblyman the same question. When you talk about a skills gap, or you talk about, you know, sort of unfilled jobs and opportunities, earlier this week, we talked about the skilled trades. I know, Harry, you heard that discussion and the value that the skilled trades brings. We also see a little bit of pushback occasionally from, you know, 538, for example. Nate Silver's website had a piece saying that he thinks the skills gap is largely a myth, that there's a lot of manufacturers who are not filling jobs because mostly because of automation, not because they can't find people. And so why don't you tell me about how you feel about the reality of the skills gap, first of all, Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you ask any employer, and we set out in early 2016 to really investigate what is youth unemployment? What is the impact that high youth unemployment, high young adult poverty is having across the state from region to region? We also set out to really understand what the state's single largest youth job strategy is doing and how employers are engaging with that program, which has now been renamed the New York Youth Works Program. And we are, and what we found by and large was that really a few things. One is that employers, you know, are not really interested in small dollar tax credits that aren't connected to skills, that whether it's a young adult or an adult that's been working and needs to be retooled, employers need skills and programs and incentives that come with helping them get the skills. And so what was very clear to us was that this the type of small dollar standalone tax credit not connected to skills wasn't really doing the trick for employers because there's a skills gap. So, you know, you talk to any employer and they'll tell you, especially in small manufacturing, advanced manufacturing across the state, that they, especially as this is becoming, I keep hearing the term a silver tsunami in the workforce, especially looking at manufacturing, which is an aging workforce. These industries are really concerned about the skilled workforce that right now isn't there to meet their needs. And so, you know, I think whether it's 538 or others that are maybe challenging how big or the size of the skills gap, you know, it's there. Again, just talk to employers, go on the ground, understand, you know, what it is that their needs are. The other point that I would make here is that you know, you can kind of see in the early 1970s, only about, 70% of jobs required a high school diploma or even less. Today, and this has been a steady and growing trend, today more than 60% of jobs, and in several years it's estimated that more than 65% of jobs will require some type of post-secondary training, which would include, an apprenticeship opportunity. And so, you know, there's an increasing need from our economy to have the skills necessary to meet the demands of employers.
All right, so I'm going to assume Assemblyman Brunson doesn't want to dissent from what he just heard. And unless you want to dissent, I want to follow up with a question for you. You agree with what you just heard, I assume?
Yeah, I agree with what I just heard, but I also want to thank Kevin and Young Invincibles. That information he just shared with your listeners is why we were able to get this over the top this year and get it passed, is because we have a survey that really supports the measure.
Okay, so in other words, in your view, skills gap is real. Companies are looking at a very serious situation either now or in the near future, and we've got to do something to make sure people, not only these companies can fill the jobs, but fill the jobs with a population that is struggling to find work to begin with. 16 to 24 years old?
The program will address 16 to 24 years old. And we talk to many employers, a lot in the manufacturing field, and they have identified the middle skills gap. I will share with you, though, that's only one aspect of an objective we want to fill. We also want to fill expanding and emerging workforces. Those are workforces that are needing more workers. Emerging will be those workforces that are being developed out of the economic development investment that we have been making here in New York State. Photonics is a great example. And the third area is trying to help people who are living in poverty, who do not have a employment history, be able to get in the workforce.
All right. So when you look down the list, piggybacking off of what the Assemblyman just said there, more funding is available when youth who are considered disadvantaged are given apprenticeships and if these youth are hired by the companies. Now, my brain goes back to, this has got to be 2 years ago now. And maybe producer Megan Mack and I can figure this out and we'll follow up because I don't think I followed up on it. I remember when Bob Duffy was challenging local companies to hire at least one person out of poverty. And I bet you that was a couple of years ago now. And I never followed up on that myself and I feel badly about that. And I don't know if that produced anything good in our community. So we'll follow up with that separately. But Assemblyman, when it comes to getting companies to actually hire people, you know, who are disadvantaged, is the record just not very good there, or do you think this can actually do that?
I think this can do that. The reality is there are employers out there that are looking to hire folks. What they need, though, is some assistance with the job training component of it. The beauty of this system is twofold. Number one, a person actually has to be hired. They're hired as an apprentice, but they have to be hired. During that five-year period, they're getting a paycheck from 1 week to the next week. They're getting paid as they're learning. And in addition to that, we're offering an additional incentive if they offer mentoring services to the employee to help that employee overcome barriers to employment. It may be childcare issues. It could be transportation issues. It could just be not understanding the responsibilities of making sure that you show up at work at 7 o'clock in the morning. Those are the kind of mentoring things that are built into this program that are not typically built into job training programs.
Okay. And
if I could just
go ahead, Kevin. Yeah.
Yeah, if I could just add, the biggest difference here from what this program is, what the Empire State Apprenticeship Program is, and what maybe other promises from Bob Duffy might be or other strategies, is that apprenticeships are a time-tested, evidence-based model that are focused on skill building and competency. And so if someone is able to move through the apprenticeship program, then, you know, the evidence shows 90% of apprentices land jobs in the fields that they were trained on, you know, with starting salaries of $60,000 and onward. So this is, you know, this isn't an experiment. This is a proven model that works to solve a problem of high youth unemployment and a skills gap. The other point that I would also make here is why this is such an urgent issue, why the way that this program was built to create stronger incentives to take on disadvantaged, low-income young adults is because high youth unemployment is more of a crisis today than if we had high young adult unemployment 20, 30 years ago. There's an increasing demand of young people when they leave high school to either get some type of college degree or post-secondary credential. And if they don't have access to those ladders, those economic mobility ladders, then they are stuck at the bottom in poverty, more so with less access to other opportunity than other generations had when they were young adults, which is why we really need to tackle. I mean, we've got 300,000 young adults more that are unemployed and living in poverty, which is why this program is exciting. It signals an important step forward on two fronts. One is that we're going to use our workforce dollars wisely because they are limited, and with federal looming cuts, they are even more under attack. And because if we're not able to cut poverty now, and if we're not able to create these economic ladders to mobility through these types of programs, then, you know, this generation of young people are left without access to the American story that we all believe in.
All right, I want to get a couple of listener questions. And listeners, throughout the hour with Assemblyman Harry Bronson today, if you want to call the program, we're talking about, in our first half hour, the Empire State Apprenticeship Program. And we'll be talking about state business on other fronts in our second half hour, but you can call 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. And Mike in Rochester is first. Go ahead, Mike.
Sure. I apologize. Maybe you mentioned it and I missed it. Are you going to be working with actual functioning apprenticeship sponsors at this point in time? Is that what the plan is?
The plan, Mike, is that there are current apprenticeship programs that have already been approved by Department of Labor. Those
right.
Those folks would be entitled to participate in this program. So, for instance, the Manufacturers Association has a apprenticeship program that's ongoing. We've been talking to businesses that are members of that association. So those folks that hire new apprentices will be entitled to the program, as well as any other industry that may want to establish an apprenticeship program, but it has to be certified by the Department of Labor.
Okay. Are there some it sounded like you were offering an awful lot of supportive services. So obviously you've got funding in there to provide folks to go out and do that supportive services piece that you were talking about?
This is a tax credit program that offers tax credits to employers that do the hiring through an apprenticeship program. It is a $10 million investment. That investment repeats for 5 years, so it'll go from this year through 2023.
Is this a continuation of a previous? This sounds like a previous tax credit program that existed one time before in New York State. Is that what this is, or is this something different?
Yeah, that's an interesting point, Mike. This is a tax credit program that is a part of the previous one. The parameters of this program is more expansive and different. What we've done is pulled $10 million, reallocated those funds for the Empire State Apprenticeship Program, the ESAP program.
Okay, so the employer still has the obligation for hiring and paying the wages. They get the tax credit on the back end. But how do they pay for the supportive services elements that you were talking about?
Yeah, the tax credit is to offset those costs.
Okay, so they could hire somebody to do the supportive services, and whatever that cost was, that they would be able to claim the tax credit for it?
If you're referring to the mentoring program, yes, they can either do that in-house or they can do that through an a third-party contract.
Okay, and thank you.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for the very good detailed questions,
yeah,
weren't they?
They
Here's
were.
A question
yeah.
from a listener named Megan. Megan wants to know, she says, do you age out of the program at 24, or if someone starts the program at age 22, can they fully complete it even though they will be older than 24?
Megan, what a great question. We had tremendous drafting problems with that issue, but we ultimately resolved it. If you start the program within the age range, then you get to continue the program up to 5 years.
So today is a good day for me to just let the listeners handle it. Listeners, you're on fire with your questions, and I'd like to get out of the way for the next hour and a half and just let you handle it. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Would take effect when, by the way?
I believe it takes effect for the calendar year of 2018.
Okay, and you know, Mike had a lot of really great questions on how it impacts employers. You know, Megan had a question on how people can be eligible. Let's talk very specifically about let's say you're 19 years old, you're thinking about work. How do you get in contact? How do you get in touch and actually get your hands on the access to the benefits that may come from this?
So this is where the real work begins, both for Kevin and his organization, as well as for myself and other folks who supported this measure. We are currently having conversations with various employers to help them understand the process. Department of Labor is still working on some of the logistics of the process, but we're also going to be trying to reach out to employees, potential employees, to connect them with apprenticeship programs that have been certified and approved. So it's kind of a two-step process. One is to work with the employers to get the things in place or to connect with existing certified apprenticeship programs. And then the second step is then to work to try to connect young people with those apprenticeship programs.
Okay. Kevin, you want to weigh in on that too?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's all right. The only thing that I would add is that we have a bit of work to do to help young adults that understand that apprenticeships are a real opportunity for them. We've done research across the country in Chicago and Illinois, where young adults and youth really understand apprenticeships to be something from the medieval times. And so, you know, there's a bit of education there to help do some outreach so young adults are considering apprenticeships as a real option.
And if I may, Kevin, you aren't here locally, but Evan had a program a couple of days ago where young people were getting skills training and training through school and BOCES and things of that nature. So connecting to those programs is going to be ideal to get those folks the opportunity that we're going to offer here.
And so let me just piggyback on that with a couple more quick questions from listeners. And then again, in our second half hour, we'll talk about other state business and we'll let Kevin get running here. A listener named Pete just emailed the program and say, missed it earlier. What kind of industries, what kind of jobs are we talking about here, Harry?
Yeah, we're manufacturing is probably, advanced manufacturing in particular, are the folks who have been most vocal about this. But we're talking about clean energy jobs. We're talking about healthcare industry. There is an apprenticeship program at U of R right now. That is connected to healthcare. Technology and photonics is a big issue locally. To some degree, the food processing industry would be key for this. So we're going to identify different industries, but those are industries that we've already had conversations with.
And Kevin, how do you answer that question about how this kind of frames up with actual jobs that are out there?
Well, I think the timing of this program is really great because the governor has recently just announced a nice amount of federal apprenticeship dollars. The state has also put in some money for pre-apprenticeship dollars as well. And so what we're starting to see is a real resurgence of apprenticeships generally to help, again, employers better connect to getting skilled workers, which, listen, there wouldn't be this much interest in this type of program if there wasn't a type of skills gap that we're talking about here. And so I think everything that Assemblyman just said is right.
All right. So before we let you let Kevin go and we move to other issues, heard from some listeners who are just saying, you know, when they get online and look for this, they're finding, you know, maybe the actual bill, but not as much info as they might expect to find. Is that going to change? Where can people get information?
That's going to change. I'm working with the commissioner of the Department of Labor right now. We're working on getting the logistics figured out, and then that will be up. There's a measure in the bill that requires the Department of Labor to market this program. So we will be following up with the Department of Labor. We're right in the beginning. The budget only got passed a couple of months ago.
So expect to hear a lot more about this.
I should just say Young Invincibles will also be launching a bit of outreach on this as well. So we should be pretty visible as well.
It's called the Empire State Apprenticeship Program, or ESAP, is what that's the shorthand you use, Harry?
Yeah, it is.
And Kevin, last question then for you. When we look at government and, you know, legislatures making decisions on, you know, how to fund certain programs and when to expend taxpayer dollars in certain ways, you know, certainly there are questions on return on investment. We are talking about a significant portion of a population, especially 16 to 24, where unemployment's higher. Some people are even out of the workforce, and there's a lot of struggle. For you, what's the easiest way to kind of sell a justification that these kind of investments actually aren't just good for the workers, but they're good for taxpayers?
Yeah, I mean, aside from kind of, you know, the moral and the right thing to do to make sure that young adults have access to the economy, especially the hundreds of thousands unemployed young adults living in poverty across the state, let's just talk dollars and cents here. A young person who's unemployed for 6 months can expect to earn more than $20,000 less over a 10-year period. So looking at a 15%, which is where we are now, 15% of 16 to 24-year-olds across New York State who are unemployed and looking for work, over the course of 10 years, if we're talking about almost $9 billion in earnings for young adults that are lost over the course of a decade, the multiplier effect that has on Main Street is tremendous. And so, you know, putting forward strategies like apprenticeships is why, you know, where you have 90% of apprentices getting jobs, you know, it's an obvious return on investment. This is a time-tested, evidence-based strategy. And so that's part of why we're calling for the continued repurposing of programs that in dollars that are being spent at a state level to really invest in things like apprenticeships, but also go beyond apprenticeships and look at other strategies that we know work, have the evidence to back them up, because we don't need to reinvent the wheel. There are a number of different solutions out there, whether it's sectoral employment or work-based learning or other strategies, again, that have a proven ROI. You know, that's what we should be spending our very limited and very precious workforce dollars on.
All right, Kevin Stump, the Northeast Regional Director of Young Invincibles. Thanks for the time this afternoon. Nice talking to you, Kevin.
Absolutely. Take care.
All right, and let's get our only break of the hour. We're going to come back and talk state business in many other ways with Assemblyman Harry Bronson. We're going to talk single-payer health care and a lot more. Your questions welcome as well after the break on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we sit down for the final time with candidates for Rochester City Council. I say the final time in our first round of interviews because there are 15 people running for 5 at-large Rochester City Council seats, and we sit down with 3 more of them, Chris Eads, Andrew Hollister, and Erica Jones. Your chance to ask them questions about why they want to represent Rochester and what they see as the future of our city. That's next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. There has been a bill in the New York State Assembly for a number of years now, put forward by Assemblyman Dick Gottfried from downstate, and it is all about single-payer health care. And he is an ardent and passionate guy, and the bill never really goes anywhere, but he has been in Rochester. In fact, he was on this program a couple of years ago talking about that. The difference now is there is more interest in the issue of single-payer health care, and maybe, some think, some momentum to actually get there, perhaps on a state level. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to happen overnight, but when Harry Bronson was elected to the New York State Assembly, the first time you were elected was when, Harry?
2010, took office 2011.
And you went to Albany determined to support that out of the gate?
Yes, yes.
And you have?
I became a co-sponsor as soon as I got elected and was sworn into office. And I have continued to be a co-sponsor since. And I have worked with Health Committee Chair Dick Goffrey to see what we could do to move this bill forward.
Why have you been a supporter from the beginning of this?
You know, because it makes a lot of sense on all kinds of levels. Number one, the level of health care is increased under a single-payer system. We reach more people, uninsured people, under a single-payer system, and it benefits localities. The reality is localities suffer some of the greatest costs when it comes to Medicaid dollars and when it comes to pension costs. Those in healthcare dollars, those are the three largest drivers in localities. So when people talk about mandate relief, having a single-payer system would help with localities. And the healthcare system, having more folks insured under a single-payer system, it just makes a lot of sense. And the reality is it spreads the cost all the way across all taxpayers of New York State, plus it authorizes and allows a reduction in the cost of health care through the contracting through a single state unit.
Is there more momentum for single payer now than when you took office?
Indeed, there is. And it's because of what has happened with the Affordable Care Act and having the new administration come in and call for a repeal of the Affordable Care Act. That the Affordable Care Act had a lot of benefits, ensuring more people who were uninsured, covering more people with pre-existing conditions. Young people could stay on their parents' health care insurance for a longer period. All of those kind of things were tremendous benefits. All of that would be taken care of in a single-payer system. And in addition, it would have those other cost savings that we did not see under the Affordable Care Act.
Now, some of your colleagues in the Assembly disagree, and we heard from them earlier this week at during a live broadcast at the Little Theater. We had Assembly Majority Leader Joe Morelli and Assembly Minority Leader Brian Kolb, and both of them were asked about the issue of single-payer health care. And what was interesting was they disagreed in one way and they agreed in another. First, where they disagreed was Joe Morelli said, we need some kind of a system where everyone is covered, that it is not sustainable for healthcare in this country when you've got millions of people who are uncovered, even young, healthy people who may have a catastrophic injury and then say, well, now I need coverage and it's sort of too late and we're in trouble. We can't have emergency room care that we've had for years. And Brian Kolb, thinks that it's good to have people uncovered. I think he just has a difference of opinion about whether we need universal coverage or whether that is sort of sustainable. Where they agreed, though, was that this particular health care bill is not necessarily the answer. And in a moment, you're going to hear from them. But Harry, let me just ask you before we hear from them, do you think that this can pass anytime soon?
It has passed the Assembly the last 2 years in a row. We've already passed it this year. I suspect that we're going to have an uphill battle in the Senate. But we are working on the Senate leadership to see if they will entertain the measure.
How about the governor?
And I don't know where the governor stands right now on the issue.
Isn't it strange that we don't know where the governor stands on an issue like single payer? I mean, it should be a pretty simple question to ask him, right?
Yeah, I think it would be. Right now we're working on trying to get it through the Senate.
I'm trying to get you to criticize the governor, and you're just not taking the bait. I think we deserve an answer from Governor Cuomo. Well, let's listen first to what can we listen to Brian Kolb first? This is the Assembly Minority Leader, Republican Brian Kolb, talking about single payer health care and in particular this bill.
There's a lot of actuarial studies out there that say the cost as sort of proposed for single payer would be billions just in New York State, forgetting the country. Certainly the bill that was proposed in the Assembly is certainly not the answer.
And here is his counterpart, Assembly Majority Leader Joe Morelli, a Democrat.
If you were to eliminate the private insurance, what would happen in order for you to maintain any level of excellence in health care provision, you'd have to dramatically increase public reimbursement, which means you have to pay for that.
All right, so let me just kind of condense the arguments they're making, Harry. What Brian Kolb says is single payer, bad idea because not sustainable. Joe Morelli says maybe a good idea, but a bad bill here. What do you say to that?
I happen to disagree respectfully with both of my colleagues. Let me first say Majority Leader Kolb mentioned it's going to cost billions of dollars. Frankly, New Yorkers are spending billions of dollars on their commercial insurance right now. These studies show they will pay less in the taxes that would be increased under this bill than they're currently paying in their monthly premium costs. That's including both those under the Affordable Care Act as well as those who are covered under their employers. In addition, the public reimbursement, yes, this is really simple. We're shifting from dollars that are going to commercial insurance carriers, we're shifting those dollars. They get paid through a tax system in the state of New York. And yes, individuals will be paying those taxes, but they're already paying more in premium costs. We're shifting those dollars to go directly to healthcare versus through the exorbitant administration costs that commercial carriers now are incurring to manage the commercial carrier system.
I'm wondering how much you have monitored the idea of single payer in smaller, you know, for lack of a better term, laboratories. In the same way that, you know, Obamacare took a lot of its cues, and I know some people hate when I use that term, so let me just pull it back. The Affordable Care Act took a lot of its cues from RomneyCare or healthcare in Massachusetts, right? There were a lot of similarities there. And what Mitt Romney has said was this was a chance for states to be a kind of laboratory. Well, a couple of years ago, here's a headline from the Boston Globe, January 25th, 2015. Costs derail Vermont's dream of a single-payer health plan. And Vermont is a state that's the size of Monroe County. It's small. It's 650,000 people. Their Democratic governor, Peter Shumlin, was very keen on single-payer. And as they got closer to it, he said, boy, you know, essentially the costs ballooned in a way that that we were not prepared for. And that they essentially scrapped it. How much do you follow that? And do you think, well, this study may show for now that this is sustainable. In reality, would it be?
Yeah, I think it would be. I think that, you know, we've had economists take a look at this. There's data that shows that it is very manageable. It is definitely a cost shift. And so that needs some adjustment. You know, part of the problem that happened in Vermont is what's happening right now, and that's the opposition marketing was very successful. And that is indicating, you know, for instance, we hear it here in New York State, that New Yorkers know that nothing is for free. Well, of course it's not for free, but when you compare the difference in what people will be paying in tax dollars for a single-payer system as compared to what they're currently paying for premium, they're actually saving money through this system. So that's the kind of messaging and marketing that we who propose this and support the program have to do a better job getting that out.
Assemblyman Harry Bronson, my guest. Let me get David in Pittsford on the phone. Go ahead, David.
Yes. One thing that's not discussed with single payer is the ethics problem in Albany. And with this kind of money going through the Albany pipeline, I don't trust that a huge amount of it will be siphoned off with the kind of lack of ethics we have by the members of the legislature and the governor's appointees and so on. So I'm against it until we get ethics reform, real ethics reform through. And then one other comment, and that is you've got hospital administrators being paid over $1 million a year in this state. And I think that's a cost issue that demonstrates the board's inept handling of the money that they're entitled to manage.
David, thank you for the phone call. Harry, he's not saying he's against single payer or even this bill. He's saying he doesn't trust, because of the history of the culture in Albany, that there wouldn't be a cost balloon because of some kind of corruption. And you know, that's a reputation problem for this state. But what do you make of that?
Sure, David, I understand your 2 points. And certainly, as we look in the passage of this measure, we need to make sure that there are safeguards put in place like we do in all other safeguards. You know, I carry a procurement bill right now that addresses some of those issues that we've seen identified in the past. So we should, you're right, we should make sure that those safeguards are in place. In connection with the cost, one of the measures here is to make sure that we're negotiating a lower cost of the actual delivery of health services, and that includes what salaries would be.
All right, to Brian in Spencerport on that same issue. Go ahead, Brian.
Oh, thanks. That's exactly what I wanted to talk about, was the costs, because it seems to me, from everything I've read over the years, is that the administrative cost for Medicare is a little bit less than 4%. That's for millions and millions and millions of people, and it's managed exquisitely. When it comes to for-profit insurance, it can be the administrative costs can be as high as 30 to 35%. Those are the true death panels, and Americans don't seem to want to understand that. The insurance companies dislike the Affordable Care Act because they try to limit their administrative costs to 14%, even though they started throwing sales costs and brochure costs and marketing costs into their actual numbers. It still wasn't enough for them. So this all comes down to how much the CEOs, 4% compared to 30 or 35%, this shouldn't even be a discussion item. It's clearly open and shut case. We have to go single payer.
All right, Brian, thank you for the phone call. Harry?
Brian, your observation is 100% correct. The administrative costs for Medicaid and getting that service to patients is much lower. I think your 4% is a pretty accurate number. Similarly, the commercial carriers are way over that percentage amount. That's one of the cost savings that we have identified in this measure.
Peter in Penn Yan emails and says, under this single-payer bill, will employers still be providing workers' comp insurance? If not, it would be a major cost savings to business owners that would offset a lot of taxes.
Yeah, workers' comp is a separate insurance system that's solely related to injuries that occur on the job site and in performance of the duties of the employment. So this would not impact workers' comp.
Okay, so let's move to a separate issue here, because what you're hearing Assemblyman Bronson say is the national climate on health care is driving interest in single payer. It doesn't mean it's going to pass this year, but it's passed the Assembly. As he said, it's got an uphill battle in the Senate. We don't know what the governor thinks. I will ask him the next time he's on this program, which will be the first time, and we'll see. But clearly, what's happening on the federal level is impacting what states are doing. In the same way, just yesterday, when President Trump announced that the United States is pulling out of the Paris Agreement, which was a non-binding agreement to begin with, but certainly there were countries that were moving in the direction of following some of the standards set. What we heard were several states come out and say, okay, if you won't do it, we will. California, among them, Governor Cuomo saying New York State is going to abide by this. And I wonder if you think, can New York State take steps to kind of circumvent President Trump pulling out of the Paris Agreement, and should we?
Yeah, we can and we should. The reality is New York State, with the governor's leadership, has started to put in place measures for alternative energy and other measures to reduce the carbon imprint that this state has. We will continue those measures. And I think we can step it up a notch now that we have, unfortunately, an administration that denies science, denies that we really should be looking at science to guide our public policy development. And so I'm very happy to partner with the governor to resist what's happening at the federal level and make sure that New York State does its part to really participate globally with the world to, you know, take steps to reduce the harmful impact of climate change.
And I don't say this at all to sort of be snarky. I'm asking sort of genuinely here. Is this one of those situations where you got to dig in more of the details on what, you know, what those tangible steps could be? Because it's one thing to say, hey, the world needs to stand together against climate change. And, you know, everybody links arm and sings Kumbaya and drives their Priuses home and feels good about themselves. But what has actually happened here? It's another thing to say, here's the hard work of the actual policy, that if the federal government is not going to say we're in on this, at least at the state level we can. But it means X, Y, and Z. I don't know what X, Y, and Z would be yet. Do you?
Yeah, I think it means taking steps to move toward renewable energy sources.
More aggressive investment.
More aggressive,
in,
you know, locally. More aggressive and sustainable. Working on a sustainable, whether we're talking about economic development and things of that nature. The reality is, look, we have a president who has decided not to continue to participate in the Paris Agreement. He is one leader of over 100, what is it, 100 and,
198 or something.
Nations who have agreed. Those numbers, ought to be questioned a little bit. Second of all, there are companies who have come out in opposition to having the United States pull out of the agreement. Companies who typically their bottom line is called profit. And those they understand in order to be profitable, we have to address our imprint on the environment.
Yeah, we saw Elon Musk, for example, from Tesla, announced that he is leaving the presidential advisory councils because of this decision and that he thought it was too important. So, yeah, interesting. Okay, well, we'll see where that goes. We've got about 10 minutes left with Assemblyman Harry Bronson. If you have more time for your questions, if you want to get them in, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Before the hour began, I asked him, what else is on your plate? Ignoring the fact, by the way, that this is, it feels like a lame duck kind of time. The governor, as Brian Kolb said, isn't even hanging out, or Karen DeWitt said, is sort of not even hanging out in Albany these days. So are you guys going to do anything? Are you going to do anything in the next few weeks?
Sure. We have a lot of work to do.
Of course you're going to say that.
Well, it's true. I mean, you will see a lot of bills passed in the Assembly and in the Senate,
Okay. Hopefully
in both houses, so that they actually get to the desk of the governor. I debated a bill last week, I believe it was, and we're working on the Senate to get it through the Senate. We were very close last year. Hopefully we can have that magic formula this year, which would require that if a construction company is barred from bidding on federal contracts, they're automatically barred on bidding on state contracts until that debarment, if you will, is removed from their record. So that's an important measure so that we have responsible bidders on contracts in the construction industry. So that's a measure I'm working on.
Without that, what happens?
Without that, then we have two separate systems. We have a federal system and a state system. They could be debarred at the federal system, but still contract and bid on contracts at the state level. We think that's inappropriate. If they've shown a propensity to violate the law, whether it's the federal law or the state law, they ought to be barred until they correct their acts.
All right, a couple other issues you mentioned and that I thought stood out very interesting. Connecting the opioid crisis to acupuncture. What's going on?
Yeah, this is in connection actually with injuries in the workplace. So it's a workers' compensation bill. We've passed this bill at both the Assembly and the Senate previously. It's been vetoed by the governor. We've made some changes. We're looking to pass it again this year. And what it would do is authorize acupuncture to be one of the medical services authorized under workers' comp. It currently is not. And licensed acupuncturists, they're licensed under New York State law, would be able to perform those services. The reality is tied to opioid, and that's why we're really pushing this, is because it's an alternative to pain medication. It's cost savings. Pain medication is much more expensive. And number two, it reduces the risk of addiction under those pain medications.
Why has the governor vetoed this in the past?
It was vetoed because, quite frankly, the veto message said we're going to do comprehensive workers' comp reform in the future. It now has been 2 years since that veto. I believe it's 2 years since that veto. We tried to work with the Workers' Comp Board last year to get it passed. We weren't able to. This year we're passing it with some changes. But the veto was not substantive. It was procedural.
All right. And if you're on the phones, hang there for 1 second because I want to hit one more item that was on Harry's agenda over the next few weeks, and that's related to mental health. What's going on?
Yeah. What a lot of your listeners may or may not know, we have a shortage of psychologists and psychiatrists in upstate New York, and in particular, central and western New York, including the Finger Lakes region. This bill was brought to me by the University of Rochester, a mental health practitioner in the university. She's the president of the association. And there was a glitch in when we passed the insurance exchanges in New York State under the Affordable Care Act. The language in the exchanges only requires commercial carriers to provide reimbursement to psychologists and psychiatrists. It does not include the other licensed mental health providers in the state of New York. This bill is technically very simple, but it has a huge impact on providing mental health services because it would expand reimbursement to all licensed mental health providers. I carry it in connection with commercial insurance carriers, but one of my colleagues, and I'm working with her, she carries it in connection with the Medicaid coverage.
Is it going to pass?
We passed it in the Assembly. I think we have a good shot this year in the Senate. I'm working with Senator Young to try to get it through the Senate process.
All right, back to the phones we go. Steve in Rochester is on next with Assemblyman Harry Bronson. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I have a question for the Assemblyman about how he is going to anticipate pushback from opponents of single payer. And I fully support the effort, you know, we're unique among civilized nations in not having a single-payer system. We've had this system that's evolved of employer-mandated fee-for-service, which is inherently inflationary. You know, I'm a physician myself. I think I practice ethically. But, you know, when you get rewarded for doing things or, you know, remunerated for doing things to patients, it becomes a little bit of a contest, and I'm sure you know that, you know, coders and coding is now one of the fastest growing aspects of healthcare administration, where if you upcode a little bit, you get charged more, and, you know, it's become a little bit of a game, and we're not really rewarding quality. And I think that's because we have this independent streak in our country where we reward and rewarded independent thinkers and don't let the government interfere with our kind of personal interactions with physicians. So that has been exploited in the past, you know, this whole idea of death panels that were used as a scaremongering, fear-mongering tactic. So I guess I'd just like to hear your thoughts about how you're going to anticipate a lot of the pushback and exploitation of people's fears to put in place what I think is a very rational approach to healthcare.
Thank you, Steve.
Sure, Steve. Great points. The reality is we are the only developed nation in the world that has the employer funded healthcare. Most others have some form of single payer or some other form of public funded healthcare. We did not do that intentionally. That was not a policy decision made. What happened was there was a shortage of employees at one point, and there was a cash flow problem with employers. So one of the ways that they started using to encourage and entice people to come to work at their facilities was to provide other benefits. Healthcare benefits was one of them. So we kind of backed into this scenario, and now we're tied into it, and we're trying to fight out of it. The reality is the opposition is going to talk about, you know, nothing is a free lunch. They're going to talk about taxpayer dollars, and they're going to talk about we're going to lose jobs because these commercial insurance carriers are going to have to lay people off. We have answers for all of those. We just have to make sure that other people understand that, in fact, you save money because of the current cost and premiums. In fact, that the taxpayer dollars will be offset by those costs. We're going to reduce the cost of medical services, and then that we will be able to provide more health care, more quality health care under the system.
All right, back to the phones we go. Rob in Brighton. Go ahead, Rob.
Hi, I was just wondering about what the guest has to say about, I mean, Trump said that the agreement's not fair as far as the Paris Accord goes, because China and India don't have to kick in until 2030. So I was just wondering, and he also said that he would be willing to renegotiate another type of thing that he thought was fair for the United States. So I just wonder what your guests have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob.
Yeah, it would be nice if the current president would identify what he believes is unfair about this agreement.
Well, I think that's one of them. He says, you know, India and China had looser standards than we were going to.
Well,
that was his understanding of it.
Yeah, the reality is each country is charged with setting up their own procedure and methodology that they're going to reduce the carbon imprint. And yes, that will vary from country to country, as it naturally needs to vary from country to country, because we're all at different levels of trying to address this problem. There is enough flexibility in the agreement for us to address those issues. And the reality is, if you really wanted to make changes, you don't pull out of the agreement. You try to make the changes within, would be my approach. The president chose to pull out. And the reality is we've seen where he has wanted to pull out of other things and an inability of this administration to try to get anything done. So I don't see how he's going to cut a better deal under the current scenario.
Well, other nations have said there is no other deal.
Yeah.
You know, there is no renegotiating. They're not really interested in that. So We're down to our last minute or so with Assemblyman Harry Bronson. Anything else we missed here? What's at the top of the list for state business that we haven't talked about for you?
Well, for me, the bills I mentioned are at the top of the list. But, you know, in my capacity as chair of the Commission on Skills Development and Career Education, aside from the ESAP program, I'm going to continue to be working on workforce development. Another thing the federal government has indicated is a 40% cut in the Department of Labor federal funding coming to New York State. Much of that money goes to workforce development. So we've been in communication with the governor's office to try to address that issue and to try to get a better return on investment, if you will, in our workforce development area. So that's something I'm going to continue over the next 3 weeks, but I will be continuing all through the summer months to be working.
And 30 seconds, ride sharing is coming. We saw what's happened at City Hall this week. Came with a little controversy, but there it is. And are you happy to see that or not?
Yeah, I mean, I would have rather seen some additional things in ride sharing. I ultimately voted for the measure. I think it's a good thing to have here in the Rochester area. Transportation is an important issue, and we're not.
How do your union friends feel about that?
Some of them support it, some of them don't. That's the reality. The Taxi Cab Association doesn't support it, but there's lots of other unions who do. What I would support is to have had more employee rights built in. Lawsuits across the country with Uber on that issue, we're going to see them here in New York State.
All right, so fair to say that's something to keep monitoring to see how that goes?
I'm going to definitely be monitoring that.
Assemblyman Harry Bronson has been our guest for the hour, and it's always nice to see you. Thank you for coming in. Haven't seen you since the election, so it's nice to see you.
Nice seeing you too, Evan. Thanks for having me on.
And I know our listeners appreciate that as well. Short break. Much more connections next.